the protests?
Well, certainly we have seen an unhinged, unaccountable military force. One judge already in Portland, Oregon, said it clearly, and we agree. They've been using the military as the personal militia of the wannabe dictator. They are using excessive force. Not only they arrested a police officer just 2 days ago, they went to another neighborhood after they attacked one of our neighborhoods in the neighborhoods on the southwest side, and they shot a woman that posed no threat to them. They also just a few days ago arrested three people, two of them U.S. citizens. One of them was a 15-year-old black youth that they disappeared for 5 hours. They are unhinged. And the best way that we can do to protect our communities is mobilizing our communities in every corner of the city, and certainly mobilizing on No King's Day to demonstrate the unity of working people. We will defeat the Trump administration. We will defeat Project 2025. And we are going, and we're asking the judges to hold the line. We see a number of rulings. We're winning in courts, but they're not respecting our constitution. And in that sense, we need to protect it by mobilizing. There will be no fear, but the fear of what will happen to us if we don't mobilize. And this is the time that we want no wars, no wars in Latin America, no wars in the Middle East, and no wars at home. This is the time to stand up and hold the line. And Chicago is mobilizing and fighting back to an administration that is unhinged, attacking innocent civilians with the full weight of the government and the militia that is being deployed as a military weapon, a militia, personally a militia of the wannabe dictator. And also the what we're not talking about, the intimidation of judges. Last week or a few weeks ago, they burned the house of one of the judges. We must hold the line and protect each other, mobilization, organizing, and not giving them an inch in the courts, in the streets, in legislative bodies, wherever we need to fight, we're going to fight back.
And Leah Greenberg, I mean, as you mentioned, these are not just nationwide protests. They're actually also global. So if you can tell us, what are the cities where you think the protests will be biggest? And then your guidance to protesters about how to keep safe this weekend as these protests go on.
Absolutely. Well, it's hard for me to say where I think it's going to be biggest. I think we are going to have enormous protests in many of the big cities across America. I also think that I can't emphasize enough how incredible we are seeing these smaller protests in places where there has never been a protest before. We are hearing about, you know, dozens of protests across Montana and West Virginia and North Dakota. People are coming out in neighborhoods that maybe have never protested before because they are so activated. They might not have ever been political before, but they are activated by what is happening in this country right now, and they know they have to show up. And in terms of safety and security, we take this incredibly seriously. We've been working very closely with hosts across the country who are organizing these protests to make sure that everybody is trained in safety and de-escalation, has a safety plan, that there are marshals on hand when needed. And if folks are interested in security and safety training, then they can go to our website, nokings.org. We have safety protocols for folks to participate.
Leah, we have to leave it there, but we will cover these protests, of course, bring it to folks on Monday. Leah Greenberg, co-executive director of Indivisible, part of Saturday's No Kings protest, and Byron Sikcho Lopez, alderperson for Chicago's 25th Ward. That does it for the show. I'll be at the Lensic Theater tonight in Santa Fe for the Santa Fe International Film Festival with a showing of the film About Democracy Now, Steal the Story, Please, tomorrow at the Woodstock Film Festival at 3 o'clock at Woodstock Playhouse. I'm Amy Goodman with Noreen Sheikh.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's nominating committee meeting will be held on Tuesday, October 21st at 5 p.m. This meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if the meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon, a public service providing help from trained counselors for when stress, worry, and sadness strike. Help is available by calling or texting 988. More info at 988oregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregonians get ready for a big weekend of protest.
Portland city councilors pledge to investigate weapons manufactured or transported in Israel in the city.
And a lawsuit asks for an emergency pause on transporting Oregon ICE detainees out of state.
Good evening. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 17th, 2025. I'm Anna Wilcox.
And I'm Sam Bowman. More than 60 events are planned across Oregon tomorrow, Saturday, October 18th, as part of an International Day of Action under the banner No Kings. Organizers say participants will be peacefully marching to show their support for ending the rising deportations of immigrants, protecting affordable health care, and defending free speech. Isabel Charlet has the details.
Tomorrow, Oregonians will join a global day of action with more than 60 No Kings rallies planned across the state to protest what organizers describe as the growing authoritarianism of the current administration. It is anticipated to be one of the largest single-day protests in modern history, with millions participating in more than 2,600 events globally. Lisa Stiller is with Indivisible, a group that is helping coordinate many of Oregon's events. She says people will be voicing their concerns about the increased detention of immigrants, attempts to deploy the National Guard to Portland and other cities, and the rising cost of health care.
Oregon is feeling this happening all over the country, so we are glad we're joining together to say, no, we are not going to have this in our state. We are not going to have this in our country. We want to keep our people safe and we want to keep our people free.
Republican lawmakers are criticizing the No Kings movement, some even blaming it for the government shutdown. Organizers counter that the event was announced in September, nearly a month before the shutdown began October 1st. Events are also highlighting what organizers say is a crackdown on free speech by the Trump administration. Jaime Contreras is with the labor union SEIU, another group supporting the protests. He says the United States belongs to working people, not billionaires.
We're saying yes to health care for all and child care for all. Yes to strong unions. Yes to immigrant justice. And yes to a democracy that works for the people who actually make this country run every day.
He emphasizes the No Kings events are committed to nonviolence, noting they've been organized in partnership with local groups and supported by trained marshals and community safety teams. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
As of Friday afternoon, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has not yet ruled on the temporary restraining order keeping National Guard troops from being deployed to Portland. That means that the restraining order is still in place going into the No Kings protests. A rally in downtown Portland begins at Waterfront Park at noon tomorrow. KBOO will be covering these protests across the country with the Pacifica Network, starting at noon Pacific time on Saturday, October 18th.
Six Portland city councilors have committed to a pledge to investigate the city's involvement in supplying weapons to Israel. The pledge asks city councilors to look into whether or not weapons or weapon parts manufactured within city limits will be transported to Israel and used in the support of the genocide against the Palestinian people. Olivia Catby, co-chair of the Democratic Socialists of America, moderated a press conference about the pledge today. The Democratic Socialists of America support the pledge.
If the flow of weapons from the United States stopped, Israel would not be able to commit genocide. That is a fact. The flow of weapons starts with us, and it has to end with us. And while there is currently a ceasefire agreement, which is such an immense relief, we don't know how long it will hold. Israel has already violated it. Trump and Israel's defense minister are threatening to call it off. So it is all the more urgent that we act at the city level.
Councilors Mitch Green, Analita Murillo, Samir Kanal, and Tiffany Koyama-Lane all spoke at today's conference. Dr. Travis Moline, a local doctor who recently went to Gaza, also spoke. So did Maxine Fuchsen from Jewish Voice for Peace. Councilor Mitch Green began to tear up while expressing his support for the pledge.
I'm participating in this action today because it's clear to me that the war in Gaza is not just some distant conflict. It is connected to us, to our city, our economy, and our own struggle for democracy right here in Portland. I have seen firsthand the damage caused by weapons of war. And And I know the surveillance and military technologies used abroad always come home for use in our own communities. We're seeing this in real time. The logic that labels every Palestinian man, woman, and child as a terrorist to justify their death is the same logic that President Trump uses to label those of us in Portland who oppose fascism as terrorists and to justify sending in federal agents and the National Guard. The goal is the same, to silence dissent and crush resistance. That's why it is my obligation as a Portlander to think about how our city is involved in these networks of violence. We cannot stand by while our public resources and our tax dollars are used to fuel atrocities abroad that in turn fuel the militarization on our own streets. I am proud today to add my name to this pledge and to begin the process of investigating and eventually ending our city's ties to the ongoing atrocities being committed in Palestine.
Councillor Samir Kanal expressed the importance of committing to this pledge now after a ceasefire has been declared.
I want to recognize the hopes of billions of people around the world that these atrocities would end with the ceasefire and that it seemed that these hopes were achieved. We also know that within hours of the ceasefire being announced, the Israeli military was shooting at civilians returning to their homes in violation of the ceasefire. We also know that violence is continuing in the West Bank as well. I want to recognize the hundreds, then thousands, then tens of thousands of Portlanders who have raised their voices in support of human rights in the region. I particularly want to recognize the Palestinian American Portlanders who spoke up at a time of great fear for their community, a time of vulnerability, and a time of immense grief. You deserve to live without fear, not only here in Portland, but around the world. And I want to acknowledge as well the millions of Jewish Americans, including many right here in Portland, who've spoken out at a time that is also a great fear for their community. This activism is in line with the historical commitments and sacrifices of Jewish communities around the world in support of civil and human rights, which date back not just decades, but centuries. Our struggles are connected, and the fight for Palestinian human rights and Palestinian life is connected with the struggles against all forms of discrimination and hatred, including racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, and more, as well as the struggle against authoritarianism here in America, such as the threat of military invasion of Portland.
Councillor Angelita Morillo closed the conference with gratitude toward everyone who has joined in solidarity in liberation from oppression.
We are inherently tied together in this fight, and we deserve a world where all people are free, where all people are fed, where all people have the opportunity to live with dignity and joy.
That was Councillor Angelita Morillo speaking at a press conference today. Morillo, along with five other Portland City Councillors, signed on to a pledge to investigate any manufacture and transport of weapons used by Israel in Portland.
Despite Donald Trump's claim he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize for brokering a ceasefire in Gaza, his approval ratings overall remain low. A survey from the Associated Press reveals that Trump's potential success internationally has not improved his overall standing domestically. Even Trump voters said he needs to do more to address problems with the economy, health care, and even immigration. In the new poll, 37% of U.S. adults approve the way Trump is handling his job as president overall, compared with 45% at the end of August. 47% approve of how Trump is handling the conflict between Israel and the Palestinians, which is an increase from September. Interestingly, the increase is driven primarily by Democrats viewing Trump more positively on this issue. In a poll last July, more than twice as many Americans were more likely to say domestic issues like the economy, health care, taxes, spending, and immigration were extremely or very important to them, as compared with the situation in the Middle East. Now, most disapprove of Trump's handling of the economy and health care, and only 42% think he is doing a good job with immigration. One of Trump's weakest issues remains health care, a topic that is of particular importance to the ongoing government shutdown. About 3 in 10 U.S. adults approve of Trump's leadership on health care, which is not a significant change. Almost all Democrats disapprove of his work in that area, as do about 8 in 10 independents and about 1/3 of Republicans. The poll results might be telling, since a new election season begins shortly. Voters in New Jersey and Virginia will elect new governors next month, while several other states will host municipal elections. Trump's weak numbers could create problems for Republican candidates who did not know whether or not to distance themselves from some of his heavier-handed policies. But The new poll might also raise concerns for incumbents in either party, since about 7 in 10 U.S. adults say this country is headed in the wrong direction.
Portland's Lewis and Clark College is permanently divesting from companies complicit in human rights abuses after a vote by the Board of Trustees today. This includes all weapons manufacturing. The decision follows 18 months of sustained activism led by Students for Justice in Palestine of Palatine Hill. The college will also publicly disclose all endowment holdings as a part of their new policy. An unofficial chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine was created by Lewis and Clark students in the spring of 2024. This came as other college students were creating a growing number of encampments around the country. The groups were united in their recognition of the ongoing genocide in Palestine, but their demands were not immediately met. In the fall of 2024, another encampment was raised. Within the week, the college administration agreed to a working group with these students. Students, faculty, and administrators worked towards new divestment and disclosure protocols. A student body vote showed overwhelming agreement that the college should divest from weapons manufacturing and disclose all their investments.
Immigration lawyers are suing to stop any out-of-state transfer of those detained by ICE for at least 3 days. Innovation Law Lab filed the lawsuit on behalf of the Clear Clinic and the farm workers' union, PICUN. They say ICE has not allowed attorneys in to see their clients or prospective clients. Clear Clinic alone was denied visits with 20 clients over the past 5 months. The lawsuit says people have been detained, rapidly transferred out of Oregon, and sometimes deported to countries they have no connection to. That includes places like Libya, El Salvador, South Sudan, and Eswatini. The motion says, quote, defendants are rounding up community members across the region, holding them incommunicado by fiat, and then moving them swiftly out of district before they have even had a chance to make a phone call to a lawyer, let alone to consult with one, end quote. ICE has perpetrated more raids and kidnapping in Hillsboro, Woodburn, and Eugene in recent days. A woman in Hillsboro led her neighbors to block ICE and Border Patrol vehicles out of their neighborhood with their own cars this week. She took a video of the officers who refused to identify themselves before ultimately jumping a curb and speeding off.
Willamette Week reports that earlier this month, ICE officers wouldn't allow an ambulance to leave their facility in Portland while an injured person was inside. When the ambulance driver put the vehicle in park and it lurched forward, an agent threatened to shoot and arrest the driver. The driver wrote in an incident report, quote, I was still in such shock that they were not only accusing me of such a thing, but crowding and cornering me in the seat, pointing and screaming at me, threatening to shoot me and arrest me, and not allowing the ambulance to leave the scene. The report continued, quote, this was no longer a safe scene, and in that moment I realized the scene had not actually been safe the entire time that they were blocking us from exiting, and that we were essentially trapped, end quote. ICE agents detained at least 3 men on Wednesday outside of an apartment complex in Woodburn. Agents were also seen stalking Washington Elementary School. Agents were also seen staking out Washington Elementary School in Woodburn, though they sped off once they realized community members had noticed them.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be mostly clear with an overnight low of 48 degrees, and tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a daytime high of 60. Today in history, in 2018, recreational use of cannabis was legalized in Canada. The quote of the day is from American playwright Arthur Miller, born this day in 1915. He said, quote, an era can be said to end when its basic illusions are exhausted.
Homeland Security Secretary Noem defends tougher immigration enforcement as critics sound alarms. A detained U.S. resident faces new terrorism-related charges tied to a decades-old case. And John Bolton is indicted on 18 counts. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We've got networks of cartel members and terrorists that are infiltrating these cities. And every day that we don't bring them to justice, they're recruiting new members to their ranks.
Homeland Secretary Kristi Noem is defending intensified DHS enforcement, saying agents are working around the clock to dismantle violent networks and prevent penetration of U.S. cities. Yet some migrants who follow legal pathways are being caught up in the sweeps. Marwan Maruf is a longtime visa holder and green card applicant who has been held for nearly a month in federal custody without what his lawyers say is due process. His attorney, Maryam Yudin, says the government just added a decades-old terrorism-related accusation in his case. She says it's based on him supporting a charity that long after he stopped volunteering with them was labeled a terror group.
DHS filed new charges this morning, the third such charging document issued in this case, at the cost of his mental and physical health. He is, in fact, the victim of a terrible oppression and injustice.
Human Rights Watch calls the Holy Land Foundation case now being cited against Maruf as, quote, one of the most egregious failures of the modern justice system. Yudin argues the renewed charges are politically motivated, part of what she calls a wider pattern of persecution of Muslim and Arab community leaders. Although Noem and others say they are targeting criminals and gang members, the vast majority of migrants caught up in the sweeps have no legal record. But Immigration Services Director Joseph Edlow argues migrants are overburdening local police, schools, and hospitals, saying enforcement is essential to rebuild trust in the system.
All of these benefits and the money for this has been sucked up by a very large population of people who have absolutely no right to be in this country. So I'm not trying to stop immigration, but I am trying to stop illegal immigration, and we will succeed.
Former National Security Advisor John Bolton faces charges for improperly handling classified documents. Bolton denies wrongdoing, saying the papers in question were personal notes. The head of Southern Command will step down less than a year after taking the position. Admiral Alvin Halsey has been overseeing attacks on small ships off the coast of Venezuela. The U.S. is building up significant forces in the region, and President Donald Trump says he has approved land strikes and covert actions against that country. Officials in Minnesota and other states warn that if Congress doesn't pass a budget to reopen the government soon, the SNAP program will run out of funds within weeks. Sophia Linares-Coy, executive director of the food group, says the uncertainty is hard on families struggling to feed their children.
Last year, there were over 9 million visits to food shelves throughout the state of Minnesota. We are seeing high demand for food resources, really driven in large part due to high grocery prices. Anyone who goes to the grocery store knows you just don't get what you did even a couple years ago.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In the aftermath of Typhoon Halong in Alaska, searchers are still unable to locate two people who went missing, along with their floating house. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Searches continue for two people missing from a western Alaska village after remnants of Typhoon Halong left one dead and much of the region devastated by high winds and flooding. But large-scale search and rescue efforts are largely on hold pending new information. The U.S. Coast Guard, Alaska State Troopers, and Alaska National Guard say they were unable to locate a floating house and its occupants before they suspended their active search Monday night. Coast Guard Captain Christopher Culpepper says the search covered dozens of square miles around the village of Kwikgillingok using helicopters, planes, drones, and more.
Suspending an active search is always a tough decision to make, and it is especially difficult in this situation where the Kwikgillingok community is already suffering so much.
Alaska State Troopers identified the missing people as 71-year-old Vernon Pauville and 41-year-old Chester Kashatuk and said they had found the body of 67-year-old Ella Mae Kashatuk. All three lived in the hard-hit village of Kwikgillingok and members of the same family. Bria Paul knew them well. She says she saw their house floating off its foundation as floodwaters rose on Sunday.
They were the most kindest people I've ever met. They didn't have much, but they always, always had a positive mindset, and they always greeted anyone. They welcomed everyone to their home. They deserve to be searched. Their names deserve to be heard.
A mass evacuation is underway for the communities of Kipnuk and Quiguingok, where 1,000 people were sheltering in schools after Sunday's storm. On Wednesday and Thursday, hundreds of evacuees boarded planes bound for Anchorage at the Alaska Army National Guard hangar in Bethel. The city of Anchorage is preparing to welcome up to 2,000 people displaced by the catastrophic storm. Community members spent the day at the Wind River Tribal Buffalo Initiative headquarters on Indigenous Peoples Day. A workshop led by a Northern Arapaho member Big Wind Carpenter had them making patties out of choke cherries.
This is like the best berry of all. It has cultural properties. It has spiritual properties. It's important that we continue this tradition because it's becoming lost. A lot of folks, they were walking over 5 miles a day. You would use this as, you know, your original energy bar. There's like 5 mortar and pestles over here. You just throw this in there, about a handful, and you're gonna start just going for it. All right, who wants to try this out?
It's hard to tell if it's getting small enough.
So inside of the pit, there's a nut, and inside the nut is the fatty acids, yes. Right? Okay. On the exterior of that is this precursor to cyanide, essentially. So macerating it is what creates that smell. You get hints of vanilla and like all of these things, like the more you just keep going.
That's a really good one. Does it have to be flat or like that?
Yeah, flat.
I am putting some choke cherries down on this little piece of paper so that they'll dry out. I've kind of ground it into as fine of a paste as I can, but the seeds are quite hard, so it took some time.
Our participants have made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 patties, and we had 5 people going, making their little mortars.
The people then celebrated the 3rd annual Buffalo Bash, a night of music and food. It's the first bash since both tribes reclassified bison as wildlife. The story was produced by Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
A landmark federal law meant to prevent discrimination against minority voters is nearing an important stage regarding its future. A case before the U.S. Supreme Court challenges a key section of the Voting Rights Act, with arguments heard this week. As Mike Moen reports, Native American advocates say there's a similar tone with a case in North Dakota.
The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments yesterday in a case that legal experts say could undercut the heart of the Voting Rights Act. Tribal advocates are watching closely, with a similar legal fight playing out concerning Native American districts in North Dakota. The case heard this week stems from the drawing of political boundaries in Louisiana. Plaintiffs are challenging the constitutionality of Section 2 of the VRA, which prohibits racial discrimination regarding voting practices and procedures. The Native American Rights Fund's Jacqueline DeLeon says there's a presumption from challengers that barriers to civic engagement are a thing of the past for minority populations.
And unfortunately, what we know through our work across Indian country is that racial discrimination is alive and well, and that unfortunately, Native voters are discriminated against often.
She says gutting Section 2 would embolden states to redraw maps that further weaken the voting power of communities of color. The legal push from conservatives comes as President Donald Trump pressures GOP-led states to update their maps before the 2026 midterms. Plaintiffs contend still factoring in race during redistricting is discriminatory. In the North Dakota case, tribal advocates last month appealed to the high court, with the focus there on whether private citizens can sue to enforce Section 2. DeLeon says while these cases have some differences, they both signal a critical juncture for long-standing legal protections.
Both cases represent an existential threat to the Voting Rights Act, and it's incredibly important that voters and that just American citizens are aware that our foundational civil rights statute is under threat.
DeLeon wouldn't speculate on upcoming decisions, but legal experts say in the Louisiana case, several conservative justices appeared poised to side with plaintiffs. Legal experts say Section 2 is the last remaining pillar of the Voting Rights Act, with other elements recently facing setbacks in the courts. However, the Supreme Court did rule in 2023 that Alabama Republicans likely violated the law when drawing their maps. This is Mike Mullen for Prairie News Service.
Microsoft has ceased providing security updates to its Windows 10 software. Consumer advocates are calling for an extension, claiming the move could create a security disaster for millions of users and send an unprecedented amount of e-waste to America's landfills. Zamon Perez has more in Maryland.
Consumer advocates in Maryland and nationwide are calling on Microsoft to extend free support for its Windows 10 software. The company has stopped automatic security updates this week, which affects an estimated 400 million computers worldwide. Nathan Proctor, with the Public Interest Research Group, says users will need to purchase new devices or risk exposing themselves to potential cyber attacks.
So many of the computers that are running it actually don't have the option to upgrade to Windows 11, and they're just kind of stuck.
Proctor says users who want security updates will have to pay or enroll in other Microsoft services, and that the cost for small businesses could quickly add up. Microsoft has extended support for its European customers, but not in the US, and has suggested users consider purchasing a new PC. Microsoft originally claimed Windows 10 would remain current for the supported lifetime of a device, at no cost. Consumer and environmental advocates welcomed the news that it would still operate on older machines and help reduce the growing amount of electronic waste. Proctor says an extension of customer support would help prevent a massive surge in junk computers ending up in landfills, but he worries not everyone will make the transition.
You have people needing to replace these computers, and then the people who can't afford to or just ignore those warning messages all of a sudden will become way more likely to fall victim to some kind of cybercrime.
Proctor notes many rural residents and seniors may lack the resources to upgrade their software or purchase new computers, further adding to the so-called digital divide. I'm Simone Perez, Maryland News Connection.